Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis here. Guest tonight, Les Stroud, Survivor Man. And we will be taking your questions next hour to see what you're interested in talking about. Coming up, we're going to ask him about his thoughts on Bigfoot. What does he think Bigfoot is, are? Where are they? What are they doing? What's it all about? And is there anything beyond Bigfoot as well that he's experienced? So stay with us with Les Stroud, Survivor Man, and myself, Connie Willis, here on Coast to Coast AM. With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, satellite, we are everywhere. We are Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and honored to be hosting tonight with Coast to Coast. Thank you, George Norrie, as well as it's a pleasure to talk with Les Stroud tonight. Les, I got to get into the Bigfoot stuff. We got to get deeper into this. What do you think this creature could be? Do you think it's real? What are your thoughts so far? Because you've gone into this quite deeply, I think, or not deep enough.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, probably not deep enough. I mean, it's how deep does the rabbit hole go, right?
Right.
You know, you're asking the $1 million question. We could spend the next 14 hours talking about, let alone.
Bring it on. We got it. Let's go.
it's and for me, it's very much like that. It's once you start researching this phenomenon, for me, there's a time where you get to a place where it's like you decide, am I going to take the red pill or the blue pill, and find out just how deep the rabbit hole actually goes. And it does seem to be a very slippery slope, and it gets very deep and very even complicated or simple, depending on how you look at it. I'm just going to be a little tangent comment in that recently, even a new, I think, a very new and very refreshing theory has come to light with a gentleman that I've actually been able to get out on the land with, Christopher Noel, and he's got a new book out called The Mind of the Sasquatch, and he's starting to draw, and you know, how superficial these are at this point is arguable, of course, but he's starting to draw parallels between some of the attributes and activities of Sasquatch, of what people talk about happening, seeing, feeling, experiencing, and autism. And the interesting thing about this is, if you want to play over on the left side of my scale, my arbitrary scale, and talk with people like, say, Jeff Meldrum and John Bindernagel, and talk about it being potentially a hominid species or a very intelligent ape, and you bring that into it, you say, look, let's take a look at some of these attributes, the swaying back and forth, the intense abilities, savant-like abilities. There are things that are hard to deny in terms of going, well, at least being ridiculously interesting. So this is brand new. As far as I'm concerned, it's one of the most refreshing new perspectives on what this phenomenon is that I've heard in a long time. Coming from Christopher Noel, and he's focused on it, and he's going to, and like we were saying earlier, you know, to deny someone who wants to focus on it being an alien or focus on it being an ape is the wrong way to go about it, and it's let them all sort of utilize their research favorite directions and go that way. And Christopher is doing it with potential autism like links. So I could carry on from there, but maybe I should let you step in before I sort of get where.
No, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that one yet, and you know, I have talked to many people that have seen lights in the sky, actual men in black, black cars, black mm-hmm. SUVs show up out of nowhere where they don't even say anything, and they have access to areas that no one else does when these things have been seen at the same time that the lights and the men in black have been seen. I've talked to people that they talk about the portals and seeing these things in like this portal, and then they would talk to them, and they would only talk to, there might be a group of four or five people, and two people hear the talk, the mind speak, and the other ones don't. However, the other ones know clearly that something happened to those other two people because they see them in a way that they've not seen them before. So they know something happened, but they weren't privy to it. So you hear that kind of stuff too. You hear soccer ball size orbs around the woods where these things are seen. So you do hear the alien UFO kind of connection a lot. A lot of theories of them living underground. That's pretty interesting as
Yeah,
well.
very much so with a lot with the underground thing. And this is here's my thought on this, okay? And then I'll tell you about my lights in the sky. During the filming of Survivor Man, Bigfoot, and it's a scenario that I did not put in the show. I think that I might have touched on it in narration, but well, it became one of those battlegrounds with the networks of how far do we go with this?
Where's the truth?
And as I yeah, exactly. And what I wanted to say was, look, again, if I go back to my scale and I think of the learned associates, people like Jeff Meldrum and John Bennett-Nagel, wonderful scientists, the Olympic Project, Derek Randles, and the material that they're gathering. The thing is, the way I see this phenomenon is, it may very well, okay, first of all, if I'm going to go on a limb, if I'm going to say what I...
Yes.
And again, you're asking the question the correct way. What do I think? That's it. That's all I got for
mm-hmm.
you. That's what
mm-hmm.
I think. I don't know. It's just what I think. And I'm basing my thoughts on my own experiences as I go through them, being out in the bush. Now, here's the thing. When I started doing Survivor Man Bigfoot, I went at it strictly for Gigantopithecus, and thinking that this is an ancient hominid/ape type species that may still exist in pockets around the world and has a substantial population existing in North America, is incredibly stealth-like, incredibly intelligent. And as I said, if you bring into Christopher Noel's new theory, where perhaps they're like savants, you know? Well, what's their savant specialty? Well, perhaps their savant specialty is staying hidden. I don't know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was down, I was staying there for the beginning of Survivor Man Bigfoot. But the more I spoke with people, the more I got out there and then began to experience some of my own things, the more I went, hang on a second. I accept all of the ape theory, hominid theory type stuff, but that you're still missing a massive percentage of anecdotal references and experiences and claims going, what about those? Because those things are starting to corroborate. Those things are starting to add up in a statistical place. So wait, there's and so my mind is saying, you know, there's something more here. Where I go with it is probably somewhere in the middle. I think it's a collective of many, many attributes. If we put all the attributes on the table, mind speak, or let's call it just telepathy for lack of...
But you can't, because telepathy is the UFO ET world, and when you're talking Bigfoot, that's the more, you know, Native American there. You've got to go with the Indian mind speak. So, sorry, I had to cut you off on that one.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is, again, my point has always been, does it have to be either or? When we lock ourselves in one place and say, they are only these things, we're locked in, when in fact they may be these things and those things, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And there's a lot of people that follow that. They think some are one way and there are others another way and others another way. Yes, absolutely.
Well, exactly. I mean, if the only part that I'll go out on a limb on, other than the fact that I'm sharing a lot of my stories and some of them I haven't shared before, is that I personally believe that whatever it may be, that it's hominid. It's not strictly a really smart ape. And my ape theorists would say, oh, you don't know how smart apes can be. It's like, yeah, okay, I get that. But I'm seeing other attributes that I think go much farther. And whether mm-hmm. it's connected to aliens or whether it's connected to Gigantopithecus, either way, it could still be a hominid. And that's where I say, you see, like, we find that place mm-hmm. where it's funny because my partner and I have been discussing the differences between Hickam, Stickam, Dictum, and Occam's razor. I've been trying to really learn how to use those properly and describe them well and without being wrong in my definition. And that's what we're looking at here. You know, I'm over in a, you know, sort of Hickam's Dictum kind of guy where I'm saying, well, it can be many things all at the same time, can't it? Or it can be multiple things, can't it? You know, and that's what I think is going on here. And that's what's frustrating us all, because over here, we have all these attributes. And over there, those interactions have all these other attributes, and they're different. And so when you've got someone from Ontario saying, I'm going to tell you what they are because of my experience, and you got someone from California saying, no, I'm going to tell you what they are because of my experiences, and I'm saying, well, these may be different, you know, just like humans. It's the same species with very meandering attributes and abilities. You know, that's the thing, is looking at it like abilities.
Well, where you are right now, after hearing other people and your own experiences and your own time out there, what are you thinking right now? What are your thoughts as of right now?
I think we're looking at a hominid species with the kind of level of abilities that scare us. We don't want to know that something has more abilities than us for one attribute or another. Now, if we're talking about the ability to mind speak or telepathy or the ability to cloaking or a survivability to remain hidden, either way, we as humans, we don't want to hear about it if it's better than us. Aren't we the top of the food chain? Aren't we the king of the castle? It scares us to hear stuff that challenges our own abilities. And look, we're awkward, you know, hairless. You know, we can't swim very well. We can't fly. Our eyes aren't that great. You know, there's a lot. You know, we've just got phenomenal brain power and dexterity with our hands, you know, sort of thing. But we don't want to hear that there's a species or potentially a species of hominid-like creature that has abilities that are greater than ours in certain areas. Now, Sasquatch do not compose symphonies. They don't build cars. They don't build cities. They don't do any of those things. But maybe in their savant-like abilities, they do other things. And they have commanded this. Another theory postured by Christopher Noel is that perhaps they're so well aware of this fact, of how they are, that it's almost like an unspoken understanding. Don't let them see us. Don't let the humans know too much about us, because when they finally do figure us out, or if they get indisputable evidence, we're done for. You know, they'll figure out us. Maybe there's that kind of thing going on. It's a very slippery slope, Connie.
It is. So maybe we don't want to think that the boogeyman really is out there, and that he's smarter than us. He's of a higher intelligence.
Exactly. If the boogeyman's got some skills that we don't have, well, that's
yeah. He's smarter than us. That's supposed to be an enlightenment.
I'll tell you what happened when I was shooting in Radium Springs.
Okay.
And this was the second episode with Todd Stanning. That's the second episode of the season, so I'm in Bigfoot. And when I was up on the mountain alone, and this was, you know, and again, so what am I doing with Survivor Man Bigfoot? I'm saying, take me into your hotspot. Tell me all about it. Show me. We'll stay out there together, and then leave me there alone. And I'll just stay out there alone, because I'm okay with that. And so I did that with Todd, and went up to the top of this mountain that he's been—he claims is an extreme hot spot—and he has all these experiences. If you watch the show, you'll see a lot of obviously what happened. You'll see the apples disappear on the tree.
Yeah.
So let's go there first. Okay. So the apples on the tree. And let's not argue about whether or not we should be baiting, or whether or not this is even going to work. Because some people.
Oh, I think it's cool. I think it's great.
Exactly. You just said it right. It's cool. So why not do it? Because it's cool. Let's see, you know.
See what happens.
So, yeah. And besides, the fact of the matter is, when I go in someone's area, I honor their version of the story.
Yes.
And Todd's version was to bait them with apples that he claims they come in and take. So we stick them high up in a tree, you know, so that we can rule out certain creatures. You know, if you want to rule out rodents and birds and deer and elk and stuff like that. So we'll put them high up in a tree. At least that rules out sheep, you know, rules out elk and deer. And I put on, you know, so, and then I do the next thing. I going with the friends of mine who want me to do it all like stealth-like and technologically oriented, I put out the cameras. So we got the motion-censored cameras out there. And I think, you know, there's no point in camouflaging this camera. I mean, let's just stick it there, and it's filming, and it's got a motion trigger. Now, the interesting thing is that night I was able to show how sensitive the trigger of the camera is, because even dust particles would set it off for 30 seconds. Now, it's got a wide shot of an apple in a tree. When I say a wide shot, so for those who don't understand filmmaking, imagine you are taking a photograph of your friends, but you're standing, 50 feet away. So you're getting in the Eiffel Tower and your friends and the parking lot all in the same shot. Now, if those friends are going to move, you're going to see it for quite a long time in your frame of view of your camera. So I set up my camera like that. So that's how it's looking at the apple. So imagine the apple's in the distance, stuck on the Eiffel Tower, and it's a big wide shot. Well, if something's going to come into that frame and take that apple, or it's going to fall off and fall to the ground, the camera's going to record that imagery. But that's not what happened. The apple is on it's recorded. Here's the interesting thing is there's a 30-second video clip of the apple sitting in the tree doing nothing. Well, my first question, which I kind of forgot to pose, was, wait a minute, what triggered the camera for that shot? There's nothing in the frame, but it's filming the apple sitting there. Okay. The next frame, the apple's gone, disappeared, vanished. And I am choosing my words carefully here. I say it that way, vanished. Mm-hmm. The camera should have recorded whatever took it. And I've got, an owl swooped in so fast and grabbed it and kept on going. It's like, I say poppycock. I know these cameras. And, they were filming dust particles, for goodness sakes. What was interesting about the apple disappearing was, I showed that in the episode. I was down in the edit suite with my editors, and by chance, one of my editors goes, hey, Les, what's that thing in the bottom corner that happens at the end of the clip? And I said, what are you talking about? I hadn't even seen it. And he goes, come over, take a look at this. And I go, and there's that little head bump in the bottom corner of the same clip the apple is missing from. 30 seconds of video footage, black and white video footage at night, and some forehead bumps the bottom of the, when I say bump, I mean it came into frame for a split second. Now, you can tell it's not the head of a bear. There's no ears. You can tell it's not an elk. And by the way, I always like to mention, whatever it was 7 feet tall, because that's how the camera was set up.
Wow.
So that was one thing. That one night, everything happened. So that's one thing that happened, and all of that is on the Survivor Man show. And people who, should I take a break with you? I got to make sure I don't. I get so verbose when I start talking.
No, this is great. You know what? I'll just cut you off, and then I'll bring you back. It's okay. You just go.
You do that.
I'll be good at that.
Yeah. So that everything happened this one night. Okay. The other thing that happened, and I did kind of explain it a bit on camera, but I talked about how I tried to stay up all night. I even took a little drink of, the 5-hour energy drink. I took a little shot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I thought, I want to be up all night because I'm alone on the top of a mountain and basically waiting to film Bigfoot. So, all right, I'm up really quite late at night and I'm just sitting there and I'm relaxed and everything. I get a little campfire going. And I thought, I should try to snooze a bit. So I get into my sleeping bag. And I'm not asleep for very long. And, we can call this a coincidental dream. I will admit that absolutely we can call this it that. But I woke up at one point, or it felt like I woke up at one point, and I couldn't move. And I was inside my mummy sleeping bag, tucked in like a mummy, so my head's inside, couldn't see outside. And all I can tell you, Connie, is that my feeling, my anecdotal story here, is that what I felt like was like something big was sitting on me. I could feel the buttocks on the side of my right arm. I was sleeping on my left side, and I could feel large buttocks on the side of my right arm, and I couldn't lift my right arm up. Now I'm waking up at this point, and I can't lift my right arm. Now, normally, if you fall asleep on your arm, you can't move it, and you dream weird things about your arm and all sorts of stuff like that, and then you realize you're on top of your arm, and it's got the blood in it. Yeah. This was my free arm and my free side of my body. And I was gasping, trying to get out of my sleeping bag, and finally, the second I popped my head out of my sleeping bag, it went, and it was just gone. And so, again, let's call it a coincidental dream. For the sake of skepticism, let's just say I was dreaming, but I'm telling you that I do know the difference between dreaming and awake, and this was like I was pretty awake when I was trying to get out of that sleeping bag.
Well, I've got an answer to that, or at least what somebody else might have said when we come back. We'll definitely talk about that. We're talking with Les Stroud. I'm Connie Willis, Survivor Man, talking about Bigfoot on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being here. Hey, everybody, I'm Connie Willis, and here tonight we've been talking with Les Stroud, Survivor Man, having a great time with him. He is wonderful to talk with, very down to earth, learning a lot about him and what he thinks about the Bigfoot, and we've got more to come. Stick around for that. Just wanted to remind you real quick, we are approaching 23,000 members for ParanormalDate.com, and now Hollywood may do a reality show on it. That's how big it's getting. You can sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, and you can learn anything and everything else you want about it too on coasttocoastam.com. More Les Stroud and myself coming up here on Coast to Coast AM. It's another interesting show here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis with the Real Theater of the Mind happening with Les Stroud. Les was talking about being in his tent and feeling something on him, big, heavy on him, and the buttocks was in your face or on your face. Is that right, Les?
No, actually on my rib cage, on my arm.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I know what one guy may say. First of all, was it like sleep paralysis, do you think?
No, and I know what that is. And I remember even going through a period of sleep apnea when I was younger, but no, it didn't feel like that at all. It was a completely different scenario. As I said, I was, you know, next level past lucid. I was just trying to get out of my sleep bag.
And you couldn't get out?
No.
The weight was on you. Well, Dr. David M. Jacobs would probably, most likely, I've researched him for a long time. Do you know who that is?
I do, yeah.
Okay. He would probably put it as in, hey, you... Because he would say a lot of things that you think you see a ghost, you think you see a clown, you think you see a demon. He would put everything to an ET, and he would say that from what you just described, you're probably going through an abduction, and that's what you remember. And then when you woke back up and everything was gone, he would relay it to something like that. What do you think of that?
Well, that's the other part of the story that I haven't told yet, and that I didn't actually bother to get into on camera. It was one of those things where, first of all, I was talking about the missing apple. Now I'm going to this point of saying I got this weird thing that, you know, I'm feeling when I, you know, in my sleeping bag. Already, when I'm delivering the show to the network, I'm like, oh, good Lord, this is going to be an argument. I can feel it coming. So the next part, I'm like, you know what, for another time, another series. Well, that night, long before I went to bed, and I'm wide awake, and I'm having a grand old time on the top of a mountain. I got a fire crackling. I looked over, and here you go. And for the first time in my life, there they were. I saw four massive lights in the sky. I'll give it maybe a mile or three away from me. So huge. There were four big round lights straight across in a line, slightly clustered together, but straight across in a line, and so, so massive. And I watched them for a while, and I thought, okay, well, if that's an airplane, it's the most massive airplane in the entire world. And I thought, well, if it is an airplane, then it's obviously it's going to come this way, and it's going to go right overhead, and I'm going to know that it's an airplane. And but I just sort of let it go. And here's the weird part. Here's the really weird part. And let's just say that one of the attributes that certain researchers give to this phenomenon is their ability to kind of connect with you mentally, to influence you mentally, to, you know, it's almost like redirection, get you thinking the other way, get you thinking the other thing, distract you, that sort of thing. Well, okay. Let's put this in perspective. I'm on the top of a mountain, supposedly filming some phenomenon that people talk about. And now I'm seeing for the first time in my life, lights in the sky that I can't explain. I've never seen anything like this before, and I've never thought I've seen a UFO or anything. I can't explain these lights. Why didn't I film it?
It never
even occurred to me,
right,
to get my camera. I got five cameras there. I've got stealth cameras set up on trees at night, apples stuck in the branches. I'm waiting to film a Bigfoot. Why didn't I? Because my mind was, there's the other very human side of this. I'm thinking, you know what? If I film that and it turns out to be an airplane, I'm going to look stupid for my editors. I'm not going to film that. So it's the whole human thing. It's like, oh, it'll
Dude,
show
be
itself.
stupid. Don't
So I
worry about
walk.
it. Get it,
Yeah.
right?
Exactly. So I walk away. About 20 minutes later, I go, or no, a few minutes later, I should say, I go back. Lights are still there. They haven't moved. Now, they're not attached to the land. And they haven't moved. And we're talking,
Wow.
I don't know if I can say how massive these lights would have been, but that's, I'd say, maybe 15, 20 times bigger than any airplane lights, And then I walk away. I come back. They're still there. I still, not for an instant, and I'm a professional filmmaker, not once did I think I should get the camera and film that. I didn't even think it would
Interesting.
make a cool part of the story just in case. I just didn't even, it didn't even occur to me. Baffles me to no end that it didn't occur to me. So I walk away, I tend the fire, I go back, and the sky's empty. There's nothing there.
Oh.
That's all of that happened on the very same night. Everything happened, I think, actually, within the same hour or two, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, that other people could look at that and think it's not even Bigfoot, it's more ET stuff, you know?
Well, this is, I mean, if you follow, I don't know if you've had David Kalidis on the show,
Oh, what a
and his Mission
fantastic
411.
guy, huh?
Yeah, so Dave and I have worked together quite a bit, and I support a lot of the work that he does, and he was actually very instrumental in helping me do my work in the Hoopa Valley and also in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. And of course, David's he's a very interesting guy. I love speaking with him. I love learning from him, talking to him. And I can get him alone and get him to, because I'm a no holds barred kind of guy. I'll look and say, come on, Dave. What do you think it is? And I'll force him into the issue, and I won't go there because what he tells me privately. But certainly his research on UFOs and the Bigfoot connection is extensive. Those books are incredibly meticulous because he approaches it like an ex-cop, which coincidentally he happens to be. So
he happens to be. He was just on about 3 nights ago, 4 nights ago, something like that, here with George.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's terrific. Yeah. No, Dave and I have met and talked many, many times. And
yeah, he speaks highly of you.
Work I did. Well, we worked together well, and it's for the same reason. He was also one of my first entries into opening up my own understanding of what might be going on up there. Because basically, I have this stuff happen on the mountain and a few other strange things. Mind speak and those sorts of things. And then I'm like,
you did get mind speak.
Something else is going on here.
You
yeah,
did
I
get
I
mind
speak.
Said
that, but
oh no! Absolutely, come on.
Well, there's another episode, Smoky Mountain, Tennessee episode.
Okay.
And if you watch that episode, you'll watch me walking out of the forest at night, and I'm feeling very very Survivor Man kind of cocky and like, yeah, I got this down, no problem, and. And I'm walking along, and I say to the camera, I say, "Ooh, I got that feeling on the back of my neck." Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to shrink from this. I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop and see what happens. Let's see what happens. Let's see where the boogeyman is. Come and get me. So I do that. I absolutely stop, and I wait. And you sort of see me a bit on camera, and I'm like, okay, well the feeling's gone now. Nothing happened. Might as well keep walking out. And so I, in a way, I'm pointing out to the audience, and I'm saying, look, I don't shrink from these things. Let's face these things head on, because that's the only way to get the truth, to get the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what also happened was I was instantly stopped and hit in my head with basically. What you want to call it. I mean, I'm hesitating, obviously. You can tell I'm being shy about it and hesitating, but it was a voice. I heard something just instantly, really strong. And it was so strong that afterwards, when I went home, I went and talked to a few people and I said, look, I want to know. Am I messing with like schizophrenia here? Like, what's this? I heard something that I've never experienced before in my life. And basically, what I heard was, we're right over here. We're two hills away from you. If you want to see us, stay.
Wow. Did you listen?
And I literally said, I answered in my brain, but I answered. I said, you know what? I'm not ready for this. No, I'm going to keep going. And then I you know, I said, you know what? And I literally thought, I am not ready for this. This is because you got to think at this point, I'm filming films about what I think is maybe Gigantopithecus, a hominid species with some, you know, a cool ability to be stealthy and hide from us in the forests of North America, you know, around the world. That's what I think I'm filming. And then I come out, and this stuff is happening before I meet David. Well, not before I meet David Paulides, but before people are telling me about all these other attributes. This stuff that happened on its own, without that influence, without the power of suggestion. Then I start interviewing more people, and all these, you know, identical stories start popping up, and I'm like, uh-oh. And that's when I'm like, crap, I'm down the rabbit hole now.
Well, it's very interesting that you said that, because I had an experience very, very similar to what you got with MindSpeak.
And do tell.
Well, I was, okay, and I'll hesitate too.
This doesn't happen in an interview very often, does it, Connie?
No, I'm turning it around. We're talking about you.
I told you mine, you tell me yours.
I was out with some people in an undisclosed area of Alabama, and Pat Rance, Keith Tyler, Willie Douglas, Mark Green, a bunch of good guys that really taught me a lot. And this was the first time I was ever out there, and they allowed me in. And I was in this tent that was like the ones that, you know, you pull behind a vehicle, but it lays out. It's still above the ground, but it folds out. You know what I'm talking about? And beds are on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with that kind of camper? So
absolutely.
Okay, so you're off the ground, right? But you know, still a thin tent all around you. And you know, I'm a researcher. I love to go out and I want to experience. You know, when people say things, I want to go. Usually things do come to me for whatever reason. You know, I knew really nothing about the Bigfoot, but so I went and was totally prepared. You know, as much as I thought, I was just going to go and get interviews and talk to people and learn and that kind of thing, and do documentary type stuff like you. And we had taken a long trip, and we found the area to put the campsites up, and so we were pretty exhausted. And it was late at night. I can't remember the time now, but it was pretty late, and I think everybody else was asleep before me. But I laid down on my side. And, you know, you're exhausted at that point. Drove probably 8 hours or more. Didn't really sleep the night before. You know, all this stuff happening and all the stories. And fell right asleep. However, within about 45 minutes, something woke me. And it wasn't, I just woke. My body woke. And I thought, what just happened? I didn't move. And something woke me, but it said also just, you know, I don't know what happened. It was very different, but I woke up, and every cell in my body woke up and felt good. It didn't feel groggy or tired or what are you doing? Go back to sleep. It was like, oh, awake. And I thought to myself, okay, I need to pay attention to this, because every cell in my body is awake and it seems to be okay. And I shouldn't be okay. I should be exhausted. So I thought, okay, let me just, you know, what's going on here? And there was a push underneath the camper. It was a deliberate push, and it rocked the camper. And I thought, whoa, what was that? I just know I'm in the middle of nowhere, and there's supposed to be a couple tribes of Bigfoot here. So I was like, wow, okay, well, maybe I, you know, went back to sleep or something there, you know. Boom, it happened again, another push, a shove. I mean, it seemed as though something intelligent put, and I don't know why I would think that, but my ambiance, my thought, my intuition said something placed its hand in a certain area and then pushed intelligently, knew what it was doing with force. And it, you know, it happened twice. And I said, well, okay, I didn't imagine that. It did happen. Then it happened a third time, and it had moved onto another part of it. And then it happened four times. And it was, I think, in three different locations, and I never heard any rattling, nothing moving, no twigs breaking or leaves. And it was during a time where you would hear somebody walking around. So that was kind of like, what's going on? Because something had force and something had intelligence and something had deliberation. It knew what it was doing. And next thing I know, I'm kind of like sitting up, kind of. I was scared because I thought something's out there. And we actually did have a light, a small light on in this tent. So you can see silhouettes of what's in there. And I kind of sit up on my, I kind of roll over on the other side to see if the person that's on the other side of the tent wasn't moving it around at one point. And then I kind of laid on my back and up and looking to where what's in front of me is the tent. And there's a zipper there. And so I could have easily taken that zipper and rolled it down and seen what was out there. My intuition was telling me there's something, there's two things right there in front of me, right on the other side of that thin piece of material that was between me and something else. And what I heard was, it's weird. It's different. It's not like people think, you know, like when God comes down and blah, blah, blah. You get like this message and it's instantaneously, and you kind of get the message in the words, but it's not like somebody just talking to you. And I'm sure you can understand what I'm saying. But what the message was to me was, here we are. This is what you came for. And it was like, take a look, you know, it was like, unzip it and you'll see what you came for. And I did what you did. I said, you know, I'm not ready yet. And I wasn't. I'd just gotten there. I didn't know they were coming. I didn't, come on, people talking about it. I'm going to interview people. It's great. I really didn't know what was going to happen. And I wasn't ready for it. And I said, I know you're there. I know you are. I'm not ready for it. And it was almost as if the answer was, okay, that's cool. Next thing I heard was they were over next to Pat had all these neat things out on a table, and it was as if they were picking up each thing, looking at it, and putting it back down. And that was one of the mind speaks I had, and it was absolutely incredible.
It is really incredible, and you're right. I mean, it's a thing where you just you know it.
You know.
It's instant acceptance. You instantly accept that this is not of you. It's something other.
How cool is that we have that communication? How cool is that?
Well, I think that if we approach these things in a very calm, sedate manner, that's when you're going to be much more open to possibility. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like to talk about is you know, when you look at this, I mean, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I've done this television series, Survival Man Bigfoot, and it's been on mainstream media, and even to this day, you know, I'll relatives or friends or family or whoever, you know, and I who to have the conversation with and who not to, you know, who
this is true.
Things around and who not to. And when you get that, is there more than one? I thought it was just one. And right then it's like, okay, well, so I know I'm not going to get into this conversation right now. And so there's that sector of society that just has 000 knowledge whatsoever, and so they want to snicker and laugh and joke. But this is not, we're not talking about the Loch Ness Monster here or Okapogo in Canada or one thing. We're talking about something that is responsible for hundreds of thousands of anecdotal references. Now, these are anecdotal references, but life is built on anecdotal references. And they corroborate, and they repeat themselves over and over again, unbeknownst to each other, you know, and in varying landscapes and distances apart. And at some point, I read it somewhere. I thought this made a lot of sense. That at some point, you look at all the evidence, and you actually look to be more naive if you deny the evidence. Once you see that it's all there, and if you still deny it at that point, you're looking naive, as opposed to the other way around, saying there is an existence and being, you know, accused of being naive.
Wow, love it. We got to hang, Les, I tell you, by a campfire. More Les Stroud and your phone calls next year on Coast to Coast AM.